ahead in welcoming those who are visiting with us. We're glad to have you, and we trust that the time you spend with us tonight will be pleasant and profitable. Since this is the final service of the meeting, I want to take just a few moments to make some personal comments. At the end of the service, I won't have any more to say. I want to thank again the elders of the church here for inviting us to come and to work with you in this meeting. I think this is about the fourth time that I've been here over the years in an effort similar to this. And I've looked forward to the occasion, and it's almost over, but not quite. But it's been all that I expected it to be. You've been very gracious to us again. We thank you for your hospitality. Those of you who have fed us and fed us and fed us, we want you to know we appreciate all of that. It's good to see old friends again and to make some new ones. And I trust that the work that we've done this week has been acceptable to the Lord. We are engaged in a meeting at Hebron Lane where we're members up in the Louisville area. And that goes through Friday night, so we're going home with two more days of services to attend. We have two services a day in our meetings there. So we'll have day services tomorrow and Friday, and then Thursday and Friday nights. And then a week from Saturday, we leave to go to Ohio for another meeting at Talmadge in the Akron area. And so we ask an interest in your prayers. It's good to see the congregation here doing so well. You have good leadership, and you have faithful deacons and teachers, a good bit of talent in this congregation, and it's been good to be with you this week. I want to thank those men who've led our singing in the course of our meeting. That's always an important part of a gospel meeting. It's been a special pleasure for us to get acquainted with Jacob and his family this week. We had not had an opportunity to do that, and I hope I can spend some more time with them. They're good folks. And she's a good cook, too, by the way. And we enjoyed their hospitality in their home tonight. I want to talk to you a little while tonight about some of the one another passages in the Scriptures. You know, when you became a Christian, you entered into a very special relationship with God. But you also entered into a very special relationship with God's people. And we have mutual responsibilities as Christians, duties to one another. There are so many of these one another passages in the New Testament that we couldn't possibly discuss all of them in a sermon of any reasonable length. And so I won't attempt to do that. But I want to start with the one in John chapter 13, verses 34 and 5, when Jesus, in this instance, if I get this thing activated here, Jacob, it's not cooperating. For some reason, it was earlier. Here we go. There we are. A little short, I think, in there. In John, the 13th chapter, verses 34 and 35, Jesus said to his disciples, "A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another." And he said, "By this the world will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." Now, when Jesus said, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another, we're not to think from that love was never taught in the Old Testament. That would be a mistake. Love was taught in the Old Testament. In fact, in Matthew 22, verses 37 to 40, when they came to Jesus and said, "What is the first and great commandment in the law?" He said, "The first commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul." And he said, "The second commandment is like it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So love was taught in the Old Testament. Why then did he say, "I give you a new commandment that you love one another"? Well, it was new in the sense of the extent to which it went. He said, "As I have loved you." That's the measure of the love he's talking about. There never had been a demonstration of love such as was manifested when Jesus came. He left heaven where he was on equality with the Father. Philippians, the second chapter, said he thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but took upon himself the form of a servant, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself even unto the death of the cross. So Jesus left heaven and came to earth as a demonstration of love. In John 3, verse 16, sometimes referred to as the golden text of the Bible, Jesus said, God so loved the world, for God so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. There never had been a demonstration of love like that. God loved us when we didn't deserve it. In Romans 5, in verse 8, Paul said, God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. And so there hadn't been such a demonstration. You think about all that Jesus endured while he was here, when he was on trial, the scourging and the unjust, illegal trials through which he passed. You think about the attempt of Pilate to release him, and the people wouldn't have it. They said, crucify him. If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Pilate said, you see to it, but I'm washing my hands of the matter. And so they took him and crucified him. He commissioned a centurion to see to this grisly business of an execution by crucifixion. And you think about all that was involved and the agony of the cross and the attitude that Jesus displayed when he was on the cross and said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Has there ever been such a display of love as that? He said, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. And then he said, by this the world will know that you're my disciples if you have love one for another. Now the converse of that would be true also. If we don't have love one for another, the world will never suspect that we've ever had anything to do with Jesus. So we need to love one another as he has loved us. But now let's change the subject. I want to move to another area. Let's move to Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2 now, where Paul said, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And down in verse 5 of that chapter, he said, let every man bear his own burden. You suppose we have a contradiction here? No, there are some things in life we are alone responsible for. We can't pass that on to somebody else. Paul said in 1 Timothy 5 and 8, if a man provide not for his own, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever or an infidel. There are some duties and responsibilities that we have that we can't turn over to anybody else. We have to take care of that. Some decisions that we make that are ours alone to make. But there are some things in life that we can share with one another. There are people aplenty who have burdens to bear. As people in a congregation age, things change in their lives. And we had an announcement tonight about Sister Pence falling, hurting herself. That's typical of what goes on when people get older. We see people come in, I see them in meetings all the time. People come in and walk with walkers and canes and sometimes in wheelchairs. And I tell you, that really encourages me as a preacher to see people make that effort to come and to be in a service. Have you visited nursing homes lately? Anybody in a nursing home? When you go in a nursing home, you see people sitting out in the hall in wheelchairs or in an open area, and there they sit and nobody there to talk to, and they're lonely. And you start down the hall by them and they'll start talking to you. They don't know who you are and you don't know who they are, but they want somebody to acknowledge their existence. That's a burden. Could you help bear that? You got some time to go see folks when they're situated like that and spend a little time with them and don't keep looking at your watch like you're being imposed upon. Give them some of your life, some of your time. You're helping to bear a burden. Remember at Manslick Road a few years back, we had a sister who was besieged with Parkinson's disease rather early in her life. And her husband was still working. And their daughter lived in another state, and she couldn't wait on herself. She had to have help. So one of the deacons made up a list of those who'd go over and sit with her and help her until her husband could get home from work every day. And Bobby was over there one day, and she said, how long has it been since your house has had a good thorough cleaning? She said, it's been a long time. And I sit here and I see things that need to be done, and I just can't do it. He said, well, would you be offended if we got together, some of the sisters, and came over here and gave your house a good thorough cleaning? She said, I would be thrilled to death. Well, some of the ladies got together and did that, and you know what? That was bearing a burden for them. Or some fella breaks his leg, or he's laid up for other reasons from his work, and his yard, his grass is growing like crazy, and he can't do anything about it. Do you have a lawnmower? You have a weed eater? Could you load it up in the back of a pickup truck or the back of your automobile and go over there and cut his grass for him and trim up around a little bit? Could you do that? Or you go to visit some elderly person and their floors, they're loose boards on the porch when you walk up on it. Or maybe there's a gutter hanging loose and they can't do anything about that. Could you? Or could you find somebody that knows how to do that and go over there and help? We had a brother that needed a wheelchair ramp put in front of his house. Some of the brethren went over there one day and did that. One of his sisters recently needed some work in her bathroom. And some of the brethren went over there on a Saturday and just completely redid her bathroom for her. I tell you, those are things that people don't do for notice. That's not a photo op with them. They're doing that because it's the right thing to do. And when you do something like that, you're helping somebody to bear a burden. Sometimes there's a death in the family, and you go to visitation and to the funeral, and you want to do something to help. Could you know the last thing people need to be thinking about at a time of death is cooking, and yet relatives and friends come and they got to eat while they're there. Could you prepare something or go by the market and pick up something and take over there to help them with that? If you would do that, you'd be helping to bear somebody's burden. Bear one another's burdens. Sometimes older people get where they can't see well at night, and they have to stop driving, and they want to come to services, but they're not able to do it without help. Could you swing by and pick them up and give them a ride to the services? That'd be bearing a burden if you could do that. Well, let's move on. Let's change the subject again now. In Romans, the 15th chapter, in verse 7, Paul reaches a climax in the argument that he begins at the first part of Romans chapter 14. In chapters 14 and the first part of 15, Paul deals with a problem in the early church that we're not as familiar with as they were. We have similar problems now. There were two issues particularly that he dealt with. One was the eating of meats, and the other had to do with the observance of certain days, special days. And the background of all of that in this passage has to do with people who are converted to the Lord out of a Jewish background. Under the Mosaic law, there were certain meats that were forbidden to them. They couldn't eat shrimp. They couldn't eat any shellfish. They couldn't eat certain birds. They were off limits to them according to the law of Moses. And pork, they couldn't have that either. And there were certain days that they observed. When those days came, they didn't work. For one thing, they didn't work on Saturday. That was a day that of rest. They weren't supposed to work then. Then there were certain festival or feast days that they observed. And so when those days came around, that was a problem for people who'd been converted to Christ out of Judaism. Now let's just suppose a scenario here. Let's just suppose here's a Jewish brother that's been converted to Christ out of Judaism, and one of the brethren invites him to his home for a meal. And so he accepts the invitation, and he goes over there. And guess what they have? Pork chops. He's never had it in his mouth. He doesn't know what it tastes like. He doesn't know the texture of it on his tongue. And he's presented with a dilemma right now. He doesn't want to offend his host, but at the same time, he's not really sure that he can eat that. And so his host sees that he's uncomfortable about it, and he says, "Now listen, the law of Moses has been nailed to the cross, and we're not under that law now. And so the requirements that the Lord gave us years ago under the law do not apply to us anymore, and it's perfectly all right to eat this meat." Well, reluctantly, he takes one on his plate and cuts him off a little piece of it. puts it in his mouth and chews it around. He's not really sure he can swallow it. Seems like the more he chews it, the bigger it gets. And the whole time he's doing this, his conscience is killing him because he's not really convinced that he ought to be doing this. And so in this context, Paul dealt with this issue. And he talked about the strong brother and the weak brother. In Romans 15:1, he said, "Let the strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak." And down in Romans 15:7, he said that we ought to receive one another because we stand on equal ground before God. Now, in this context, Paul said that the strong brother is not to place a temptation in the way of the weak brother. He's just not to do that. He's not to try to compel him or persuade him to act against his conscience. In fact, in Romans 14, in verse 5, he said, "Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind." That didn't mean they couldn't discuss the question or the issue. There was an issue with them about it. They could study it. In fact, if they didn't study the issue and come to an understanding of what the will of God was, the weak brother could never get to be a strong brother, could he? On the other hand, in the 14th chapter, he makes the point that the weak brother is not to use his private scruple as a club to beat the strong brother over the head with. That wasn't to be done either. He's not to make his conscience everybody else's guide. Now, you know, we all have scruples about various things. We've come out of different backgrounds, and we have to learn to live with those, and we have to learn to live with each other in the kingdom of God. And so Paul said, you need to receive one another. The other issue had to do with the days, observing days. He said, some brother esteems every day alike. And to others, there are certain days that are special to them. Let's pose another scenario. Here's a brother converted to Christ out of Judaism, and he's never worked on Saturday in his life. Here's a brother now that says, well, you know, my barn burned down, and we're going to have a barn raising out at my place next Saturday, and some of the brethren going to come out and help me put my barn back up. How about coming out and helping? Well, he wants to be a part. He doesn't want to be left out. Well, get your hammer and saw and come out and help us. Well, he reluctantly does that. So he goes out there and he gets up on the roof and he's nailing shingles on. And the whole time he's doing that, his conscience is hurting him because he has never done this on Saturday before in his life. And again, the strong brother says to him, the better brother who's better informed, now listen, every day's alike with the Lord now. And this business of observing the days, whether it's the annual observances or the monthly observances or the weekly observances of the Sabbath, we're not bound by that anymore. And you need to get over it and just go, come on and be a part now. Well, reluctantly, he goes along with that, but his conscience hurts him. What needs to be done with the weak brother? He needs to be taught. And he needs to have time to be taught. And the strong brother needs to be patient with him. And he does not need to use his liberty, which he has in Christ, as a means of offense to that weak brother. He's got to have time to grow. His conscience and his faith, his understanding, have to catch up with each other. And so Paul said in Romans 15:7, receive one another, because we're all the children of God. Well, let's change the subject again. In the fourth chapter of Ephesians, verses 31 and 2, Paul said, be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Now, there are three one another's in those two verses, but I want to focus on the be kind to one another issue. You know, we're living in a world that's full of anger and hatred. We have the most unspeakable things taking place now in other parts of the world and sometimes in our own country. Politics. We're in an election cycle this year. I've lived a pretty good while now, and I've seen political campaigns come and go. And opponents in political campaigns criticize one another. That's par for the course. But I don't think I have ever lived in a time when we've had as much venom and vitriol as I see now in politics. It's to the place now where a good man who might be a worthy candidate, somebody who would be a good public servant, is hesitant or reluctant to expose himself and his family to all of the caricatures and all of the criticisms, all of the hunts for skeletons in the closet that goes along with it nowadays. Not just in politics do we need to have some kindness shown. We need to have it in our families. Isn't it a shame that sometimes we reserve the shabbiest treatment of all for the people we say we love the most? Sometimes in our homes we have husbands and wives that cannot speak peaceably to one another. They've got to one-up the other one. Now they're in competition. God never intended for husbands and wives to be competitors. That wasn't how He designed it at all. And sometimes in the family relationship, it gets out of hand. And it gets physical. And so we have places for battered wives to go for relief. Or for battered husbands. We have some of those too. There's a hotline in Louisville for battered husbands that they can call to get relief from a situation of this kind. And sometimes children are very unkind in what they have to say to their parents. I've been at home sometimes when they were teenagers who are surly and belligerent. And in spite of the fact that guests are in the home, they speak up to their parents as if they have very little sense or knowledge about anything. They kind of roll their eyes at what their parents have to say. You've never had any eye rollers at your house, have you? I've had some, and we had to deal with those eye rollers. But people speak unkindly to one another. Sometimes siblings in a family, brothers and sisters, can't get along with one another. And that doesn't end when they grow up. Sometimes as children grow older, mature in years, they're still very unkind to one another, and especially after a death takes place in the family, and the family starts squabbling over dividing up the leftovers. Who's going to get this lamp, and who's going to get that chair, and who's going to get this piece of jewelry that mother had or grandmother had? And so people begin to fuss and to quarrel about that. And sometimes when the will is read, there are those who want to contest it and go into the courts to battle over it. And they get to where they don't ever speak to one another again. How sad. And sometimes in the church, we're unkind to one another. I've always, as a preacher, I've always dreaded business meetings. Congregation where you don't have any elders and the only way you can conduct business is to get all the men together. And you know, you can be going along peacefully for a good while in business meetings and things get done. And all of a sudden, as Tennessee Ernie Ford used to say, somebody drops a clod in the churn. And the first thing you know, you've got a major eruption, an explosion. And people start saying hateful things to one another, and then people start choosing up sides, and it can lead to open division and rupture in the church. Whatever happened to kindness? Be kind one to another. We live in an age where we want everything done quickly. We want it done right now. Fast food. We've got computers, and we can click a mouse, be in touch with somebody on the back side of the world. And he can reply to us right in a hurry. Microwaves. All of these things. We've got phone numbers. It's amazing to me how much information people can get from a little telephone. I don't know how to do all that, but the young people do. And they just flick, clip, clip, to a few things and then find out just exactly what you want to know. In fact, I wasn't sure what time the evening services were going to be down here last week. And I was visiting somebody in the hospital, and the fellow who's in the hospital, his daughter was there. She said, wait a minute, I'll find out. And so she got her phone out, and she clipped two or three things. She said, it's at 7 o'clock. And I thanked her for that. But we're in an age where everything can be done instantly, hurriedly. And we don't want to be delayed. If you ever get in line behind me at Walmart, I want to tell you, be prepared to wait. You don't want to get in line behind me. I have a talent for getting in the wrong line. In fact, I've refined it to an art form almost. I was coming out of Walmart the other day, and I just had two items. And a woman in front of me had to have a price check. And we had to stand there and wait for somebody to come from the back of the store. She came up there and said, "Well, we got this fixed now." And she left, and it still didn't work. The thing that the card she had didn't go through, and we had to wait for her to come back again. So don't get in line behind me. I get in the wrong line of traffic regularly. And it's easy for people to lose their temper, to be unkind to one another. I heard a preacher's wife, Jacob, said her husband was such a gentleman that he'd hold the door for everybody in the building till he got out and then try to run over every one of them in the parking lot. There's something about getting behind the wheel of an automobile that does things to people's psyche. Have you noticed that? We've got road rage. You don't get out of a fellow's way in a hurry, he wants to let you know that he's unhappy about that. And you don't want to make eye contact either, because it's dangerous to do that. Really. Whatever happened to kindness? You're in an airport, and there's been fog in Chicago, and the plane you're supposed to catch in Atlanta can't get out. Or it's delayed getting there. And since it's delayed getting there, you're going to miss your connection there to go somewhere else. And so you get in that line and you get up to the counter. You're trying to scramble around to make other plans and other arrangements. And you take it out on whoever the fellow happens to be behind the counter. You can't help it. Or sometimes there's a mechanical problem with the plane and that it's delayed. I want them to fix that before I get on it. I don't know about you. But kindness, be kind one to another. We need to keep that in mind all the time. We're God's people wherever we happen to be. And we need to act like it. Be ye kind one to another. Let's change the subject again. In 1 Peter 4 and verse 9, Peter said, "Use hospitality one to another without grudging." When you use hospitality to one another, don't begrudge what you're doing here and feel like or act like you've been put upon to do that. Whatever happened, you suppose, to hospitality? I grew up in a little different culture from what we have nowadays. People used to visit. When I was a kid, if we saw car lights coming through the cornrows, they were coming to our house because there wasn't anywhere else to come up that road except our house. And my mother would say, "Somebody's coming, you kids pick up," and that meant straighten up the house a little bit because company's coming. And I was always glad when company came. We didn't have television. Can you young people imagine a time when nobody had television? We didn't have one. And they didn't call ahead because they couldn't. They didn't have a phone. We didn't either. They just came. They just loaded up the car and here they came. And it was always entertainment. The old folks would sit around and talk. And the kids would get down on the floor and listen to what they had to say because they'd tell funny things and sometimes scary things. But it was entertainment. And every once in a while, my dad would say to my mother, "Hon, could you go out in the kitchen and mix us up a little fudge?" It's a party. Company came. And we'd load up and go see some of our kin folks that way sometimes, some of our friends that my daddy worked with. Didn't think anything about it. Hospitality. There was a time when somebody on Sunday would come up to you at church and say, "Come go home with me for dinner." And they meant it. Serious about it. During World War II, I was a teenage boy. I was too young to be in World War II. But we didn't live very far from Fort Lee, Virginia. And we had a lot of young men to come through there, just some of them, most of them just out of high school. You servicemen can identify what I'm talking about here. And so my folks, my parents, and some of the other church members made it up between them that they wouldn't allow a serviceman to leave the premises on Sunday without somebody inviting him home with them for dinner. And sometimes my daddy would take us home. He'd get a bunch of soldiers together and he'd say, "Boys, I'm going to come back and get you and take you out to my house, our house for dinner. I'm going to take my wife home. She'd get started on it and I'll come back and get you." And he would. And others did the same. And we had boys to come from all over the country and visit in our home. And it was entertaining and educational. They tell us all about where they came from, and they had pictures of their football team and their girlfriends. And some of these boys were homesick, and some of them were lovesick, and some of them were scared to death. They didn't know what was going to happen to them when they were shipped out overseas to the Pacific or to Europe. And so it was a tense time for them in a lot of ways. But we made some friends with some of those young men. Some of them came back to see us when the war was over and came and hunted us up and let us know how much they appreciated the kindness that was shown to them, hospitality. You talk about hospitality. Folks, I would not be standing before you tonight as a preacher, very likely, had it not been for an act of hospitality at our house. When I was 12 years old, we had a preacher from Washington, D.C., come down to Hopewell to hold a gospel meeting. He had gone to Washington as a secretary for Senator J.C. Rankin from Mississippi. And he was in government service, but he preached around, and he was so good at it, the brethren prevailed upon him to quit his government job and just devote his full time to preaching. And he was coming for a meeting with us. And so they had a business meeting one night, and my daddy was a little bit late getting out. We all waited in the car for him, and he came out, and my mother said, "Well, kind of a long meeting, wasn't it?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Brother Stocks is coming for our meeting," and said, "We're trying to decide where he was going to stay." He said, "Didn't look like anybody wanted to keep the man." And my mother said, "Well, who is going to keep him?" And my daddy said, "We are." You'd have to have known my mother to appreciate it. She said, "We are?" She said, "If you lost your mind, we don't even have a bathroom in the house." We didn't. She said, "How's a man going to take a bath?" Daddy said, "In the number two wash tub, just like we do. You pour water in, you get and sit down in it." You see, men fix things, you know. Women worry about things, but men fix things. We're fixers. And my dad didn't see what the problem was. She said, "I don't even have enough dishes that match to set a table." Well, Daddy said, You got two sisters and they got lots of dishes. You can borrow some of theirs." He had it all arranged, all fixed. Well, the deal had been struck, and my mother had too much pride to back out. Now, in defense of my mother, she got over that because we had a lot of preachers in our family, and she got well over that. But at any rate, he came. They painted the room that he slept in. And we thoroughly enjoyed having him. I never knew that a preacher had so many funny stories to tell. He kept us all entertained the whole time he was there. And he'd been to places that I'd only heard about. Seemed like faraway places to a 12-year-old boy. And one day he said, "I've got to go over to town to get my car serviced," and he asked me to go with him. And for some reason, I don't know why, but he called me Cornelius. That's not my name, and don't you call me that. He said, "Cornelius, I got to go to town and get my car fixed. And how about going over there with me?" And my mother said it was all right if he didn't care, so we went and started to town. And on the way to town, he said something that turned my whole life around. And it's partly the reason that I'm standing here tonight doing what I'm doing. He said, "Cornelius, what are you going to do when you grow up?" And I said, "Well, my brother Wiley," he was older than I was, "my brother Wiley and I are going to Nashville, Tennessee and play on the Grand Ole Opry." And I was serious about that because we were playing music then. My brother had a band, and I was part of it. And we played on the radio three nights a week from WSSV in Petersburg, Virginia, and we had sponsors. One of them was Moskin's Credit Clothiers, and they paid for the radio time and paid us to play. And we'd put on shows in schoolhouses around, sponsored by the fire department or the police department or the garden club. And we were paid for that. And so that was our dream. We fully meant to go to Nashville, Tennessee and play on the Grand Ole Opry. He said, "Well, you know, that sounds like fun. But did you ever think about being a gospel preacher? And I said, no, sir, I don't think I could do that. I wouldn't know what to say. He said, well, he said, does it make you nervous to get up and pick and sing in front of people? And I said, no, I kind of like it. He said, see there, you've got stage fright whipped already. And he didn't say any more until we started back home. And on the way back home, he said, you know, Cornelius said, I've got some notes that I've typed up. I've been studying on church history about how all the different churches got started. He said, I've spent a lot of time on that, done a lot of research, and said, I've typed all those up and said, while I'm here, if you'd like to, you can copy those and keep them because you never know when you might need something like that. Well, when we got home, I rushed in the house and got some paper and sat down and laboriously copied those. It took several sittings to do it because he had a lot of them. And I still got them. I still have those. You know what he did when he asked me that question? You ever thought about being a gospel preacher? He planted a seed in my heart. And you know what? I hadn't been able to get rid of it yet. I'm still trying to find out how to do it. And I've stayed in a lot of homes over the years and meetings. And I don't know how many times I've asked some little 12 or 13 or 14-year-old boy, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I've said to them, I hope I get to hear you preach sometime. You don't ever know, do you? You just don't ever know. Hospitality comes back again. And so hospitality is something to be shown between Christians. Use hospitality one toward another. You know, we need to see each other and be with each other more than just here inside a building like this. We need to know about each other. We need to be able to help each other and encourage one another. So use hospitality one toward another. Let's try one more thing. In Hebrews, the 10th chapter, in verse 24, the Hebrew writer said, consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Consider one another. Sometimes we take the attitude when brethren try to find out why we haven't been coming to services, we take the attitude that says, listen, it's none of your business. It's absolutely none of your business. I'll come when I can. And you don't need to know that. And since I've been trying to serve as an elder in the church, I call people when they're not there on Sunday and tell them, we missed you. Is there something? Are you sick? Is there something we can do? Try to find out about it. Sometimes there are situations where we need to step in and help. And sometimes it's carelessness. And if that's what it is, we need to know that. Don't take the attitude that says it's none of your business. It is our business. It's every Christian's business, whether you're faithful or not. Because when you're not faithful, you discourage other people. You encourage them not to be faithful. Consider one another. To stir one another up. Provoke means there to stir up to good works. To encourage each other to do things that we ought to do. And one of the ways that we encourage each other is to come together and worship with one another. The next verse talks about that. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, but exhorting one another. There's another one another. And so much the more as you see the day approaching. We need to be mindful of one another and consider each other. We need to consider those who are babes in Christ. They need time to grow and to develop in the service of the Lord. Sometimes there are people who have weaknesses that it takes them a little while to conquer. And so we need to be patient with them and help them all that we possibly can. One another. Love one another as I've loved you. Bear one another's burdens. Receive one another. Be kind one to another. Use hospitality one toward another, without grudging, and consider one another. That's what I came to tell you tonight, and I've told you, and you listened well, and I want to thank you for it. You've been a good audience all week long. Good listeners, and I'm so grateful to you. for that consideration. Would you open your hymn books now to the song that's been chosen for the invitation? Come, Sinner, Come. Is that it? We're going to stand in just a little bit and sing this song, and if you're not a Christian, we want to invite you to become one. If you believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and you're willing to turn from every sin in your life in repentance, if you're willing to confess before men with your mouth what you believe in your heart to be so about Jesus Christ, then this very night we will baptize you into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. If you've never done that, this would be an ideal time. You'll never find a better time than now. Yesterday's gone. Tomorrow's not here. But now is. Take advantage of it. If you're someone who started serving the Lord and you've grown weary and well-doing and you've fallen by the wayside, you don't have to stay that way. Come to your senses and, like the prodigal, come home. We'll pray with you and for you and do everything we can to help you to be all that God wants you to be. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, would you make your way down to one of these front seats right now while we stand together and while we sing? Let's sing.